I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:35 on Friday, January 23rd, 2026. Present today are Representative Allard, Representative Hannon, Representative Moore, Representative Bynum, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Galvin, myself, Co-Chair Josephson, and I saw him as well. All right. Also present today are House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Tallulah-Lastufka, Secretary Bree Wiley, and Secretary Leah Frazier. We've been joined by Co-Chair Neil Foster. We also have our moderator, Emily Mesh, here from the Legislative Information Office. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. In today's meeting, we will hear the Office of Management and Budget present its overview of the Governor's FY27 operating budget. With us today from OMB is Director Lacey Sanders. Good afternoon. Happy New Year. Director Sanders, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation.
Good afternoon, everyone. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders. I am the Director of the Office of Management and Budget for the Governor. Today, as noted by the Chair, I will be providing an overview of the Governor's FY27 budget that was introduced in December. And I will walk through both operating and capital today, as well as the supplementals that were included in that budget on December 11th. Okay. All right.
Please proceed.
Thank you. So with that, I was going to start the presentation today doing a little bit of a look back and where we are today. So I'm going to start with fiscal year 2026. This is the budget that was passed last year by the legislature and enacted into law. At the time when the budget was signed, we had a spring revenue forecast of $68 a barrel and a total budget of just over $6 billion in unrestricted general funds. At that time, that provided a surplus of about $141 million. However, at that time, we worked with the Department of Revenue on what realistically we were seeing in the market as it pertained to the price of oil. And at the time that the budget was passed, we were seeing the price of oil come down very significantly. And so that drove a lot of the work that was done in the veto review process with the governor to determine what level of a budget was going to be sustainable looking forward into the future. If you may recall, and is posted out on the website, there was a letter from the former Commissioner of Revenue providing various scenarios at that point in time on the price of oil. So leading to where we are in December, the fall revenue forecast came out. I know this committee received a presentation from both the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Revenue on the production and the revenue forecast. The fall forecast included the price of oil at $65.48, which is a decrease of $2.52 from last year's spring forecast. Which results in approximately $193 million in less revenue available for the state. So moving on down, just giving a comparison of where we are now with the fall forecast, we have an overall deficit of about $52 million without any supplementals being added at that point in time. And then just for comparison purposes, we've provided just a brief snapshot of the supplementals that were included in the budget on December 11th. I will walk through them in a bit more detail as I go through the presentation, but those totaled $294 million. And so at that time, last year, if we had continued at $68 a barrel that was projected in the spring, the overall deficit would have been $153 million. Now, with the price of oil going down, we are looking at a total deficit overall of $346 million between the $52 million deficit for oil and then the additional supplementals that were presented.
Okay. Slide three.
So moving forward,
we have a question, Director, from Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and through the chair. Before we really get jumping in here, I hate to ask this, but we looked and you're posting the fall number for oil at 65.48, and that's what the published number is. But when we did the forecast on budget, we're saying that we're going to forecast for this full period of 68. Is the 65.48 number? Are we taking into consideration or account fluctuations prior to that forecasted number? So we know that we're looking at a forecast for where we're going to be to the rest of the fiscal year and where we have come from. Is that number taking into consideration the previous fluctuation and then the assumption for where we're going to go forward?
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Bynum, the Department of Revenue, obviously, they're the ones that are responsible and very knowledgeable when it comes to the revenue forecast. They work to incorporate actual oil that has prices that have occurred leading up to that December date. And then the revenue forecast is based on those actuals and then a projection of the remainder of the year that they anticipate. Checking today, I feel like it's, for me, something that I do on a daily basis, or I feel like my heart rate might go up or down with the price of oil. We've seen it, you know, as low as down to $60 a barrel. Today it's about at $65. So they are tracking that really closely. And as you're aware, later in March, we will have an updated spring forecast that will capture the December, January, February prices that we're experiencing.
Great. Thank you. That works great.
Please continue. Slide three.
Thank you. So slide three, moving forward, just wanting to continue that look at where we were and where we are now. Again, starting with the spring 2025 forecast, it was approximately $67 a barrel that was being projected for the 2027 budget. As we've seen in the fall forecast, it came down $5 to $62 a barrel. So this is projecting forward to next year, which is approximately a $119 million decrease in unrestricted general funds or revenue. One of the conversations when we started working on the budget for the governor and in those conversations of budget development were how do we move forward? And so with the governor recognizing that there were decreases in the price of oil and the unknown about what was going to be happening at the federal level, the governor's direction was to start from the base budget and really focus on those contractual obligations of the state and what we are statutorily required to do. So as many people have noted, this is a very slim budget or a light budget this year, but that was the approach that was taken. So starting off with what we refer to as a base budget, meaning we've taken all of the one-time items out of the budget from the prior year, we start off with last year's budget was just over $6 billion. We've removed all of those one-time items, which were about $46 million. We've added in $55 million for our contractual agreements and about $22 million worth of what we consider obligations that are statutorily required for things like debt or retirement. Those totaled about $22.8 million. We get an overall fiscal year 2027 budget of almost $6.1 billion. At that point, we do, there reflects a surplus of $269 million if you were using the spring forecast and $150 million if you were utilizing the fall forecast. As was stated in the December press release, the governor's budget, again, this year includes the statutory dividend. So we have included that. It is a $1.7 billion increase over last year's dividend amount. And this brings us to our overall surplus and our overall deficit of about $1.5 billion. As noted earlier, the governor's budget does draw from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. That fund balance is just at about $3 billion. And I have provided on slide four, if it's okay, just a brief snapshot of what we refer to as our fiscal summary. This is the short fiscal summary, combining all of the information that we just talked about for just unrestricted general funds. And I'm happy to take questions.
Okay. Any questions on slide four? Please, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Ms. Sanders, I'm flipped real quickly, and I don't see a slide specifically on the supplementals, and you're going to address them. But in some of these calculations where we're looking about our base budget, they're not included, and then some of them are in the 26, but they're 20. So I'm looking for that detail pretty soon here to keep running that surplus deficit math in my head.
Director.
Chair, Representative Hannon, I will talk through each one of them and whether they are incorporated into the 27 budget that we've proposed.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Moving on to slide number five. This is just a representation each year. We refer to this graph. I know Legislative Finance Division has their own version of it. This is the SWOOP graph. Providing a comparison to the FY26 budget to the FY27 budget for unrestricted general funds only, from least to greatest. And you can see a comparison of where we've also identified and highlighted this year the formula funds associated with the programs. So just an informational slide for the group. Happy to address any questions if there are any, each year we highlight the fact that K-12 foundation formula and Medicaid make up a substantial portion of the budget.
All right. I don't see any questions. We'll move to slide six.
Okay. So beginning on slide six, I'm just going to walk through a few of the highlights in the budget today. Obviously, I know the subcommittees and the committee, the House Finance Committee, will go through in more detail each of the agencies as they work through their budget process. Happy to address any questions as we go through if there's something that's not noted here today. But just wanting to highlight a few of the things that are captured in the budget. So starting with the Department of Administration, the Division of Personnel completed the statewide information technology classifications study and is working on the implementation plan associated with that. So there is a budget increase to address the cost. It was an estimate based on the Office of Management and Budget completed an estimate based on the Division of Personnel's allocation of all of the positions that would have been changing. They are working on a phased approach to implementing that classification study as we speak. One other significant change in this year's budget is the transition of Shared Services of Alaska, or SSOA, and accounts payable back to departments. This is something that is being done statewide, so that division will be, the employees that were working that division will be returned to agencies, and then the services will be completed by the department. As part of a review and a survey of departments, we asked questions about how well the process was working, if we were seeing duplication or redundancies in the processes, and we were. And so to expedite ensuring that travel reimbursements are done timely and things are processed more quickly, those positions will be returned to departments. So you will see throughout the budget those changes being made in all departments. Additionally, we are transitioning payroll services back to eight respective departments. As part of the survey, there was an inquiry about the payroll services that were being performed. And what we found is that a lot of agencies that have more complex and technical contracts that they're implementing in payroll services, there was a strong desire to bring those individuals back into the department to be more centralized focus on processing payroll associated with those agencies. So if you think about agencies like Department of Corrections with the Alaska Correctional Officers Association or Public Safety, those contracts tend to be more complex and complicated. Those individuals will move from the Department of Administration back into the departments, and payroll will be processed within those respective departments. I will say the Department of Administration is taking the lead on this process. They are also setting up steps to continue to support the agencies that are more administrative and be a lead for all agencies as we work to ensure that processes are still consistent and that we are making sure that rules are applied appropriately.
Representative Tomaszewski for the director.
Thank you, Chair Josephson, through the chair. Thank you for that information. So what does that process look like as far as positions? Is each department going to need extra positions to process the payroll? Are you going to be eliminating positions in your department that's doing it now? So kind of how's that going to play out
position-wise?
Through the chair, that's a great question. So right now what we've done is we've identified the positions that are within the Division of Finance that will be returning to the departments. The departments that are taking on payroll within their agencies will need to determine what organizational structures that they need to have with those either individuals that are in the positions or the vacant positions that they are getting returned to them. There is a group of employees in them that will be staying in the Division of Finance as they process payroll for other agencies that didn't have it returned to them. So it's kind of a mix of everything. We're not adding any new positions at this time. We're just reorganizing. That's how I would think about it.
Okay. Representative Staff.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair to Director Saunders, so thanks for being here, as always. Kind of on the note of the payroll, oftentimes we do this back and forth centralization of services into decentralization of services. Obviously, we are now decentralizing a service again. So my question is there any way that maybe we can leave behind a best practices or after-action review, as we call in the Army, of like, hey, we tried to do this, this is why it didn't work out, and this is why we're going back? Because at some point, you know, maybe not us here at this committee, but at some point down the road, someone's going to try to centralize payroll again, and then it would be nice for them to know why we didn't do that anymore, through the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Staff, that's a great point. I, in my 20-plus years with the state, have seen organizational shifts and undoing and redoing, and I do think it is a good opportunity for us to sit down and maybe write out what we're experiencing or what agencies are experiencing. So, yes, thank you for that comment.
Thank you.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. Hi, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate the work you've done, Commissioner. My question is around the new classification study or the classification study that we've been waiting on for quite some time, and then it sounds like later we're going to hear about the implementation phasing in, and it's the phasing that I had a question around. You may already have this built in, but if you could give us a sense of this is the first portion, but there will be more next year and the year after, whatever it is that design looks like, so that we can have a little bit of anticipation of the build up, or maybe even what percentage of the change that you've decided to take on, given what you learned, that would be great.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Galvin, I'm going to provide just a little bit of clarification. So there was a salary study that was completed, and the Department of Administration mm-hmm. is working forward on what the next steps are there. Mm-hmm. This is the statewide information technology study. The FY27 budget incorporates the cost associated with an entire year of implementation.
Okay.
The phased approach meant that the Division of Personnel would start with classes now that don't have a cost change associated with them. So we can
okay.
break up this large study into groups as we move forward so that on July 1, everybody's in their correct classes or as near to that as we
follow
can get.
Follow up, if I may.
Yes, follow up.
I just want to make sure I'm tracking. Thank you, co-chair. So the idea is that no change in funds, just a change in classification, and you're trying to help build that in so that they are appropriately titled given whatever they're doing.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, yes, for that first phase.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Okay. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Ms. Sanders, the budget books for the subcommittees that I'm chairing says something different, so let me walk this out. That the IT classification study for the Department of Environmental Conservation and Department of Transportation both have increments for the implementation of the IT classification study to be implemented. I think the IT reclassification versus the salary study are two different things, and that we are, my understanding is that the IT reclassification is being done in the base, in the budget as submitted and through all the departments for FY27.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, that is correct. I was speaking to the Department of Administration starting now in this current fiscal year on classes that don't have a cost associated with them.
For the salary study?
No, for the information technology study. So that is being broken into phases.
So follow up?
Yeah, I think what you're saying is
the budget books I'm looking at show an increase. So
for fiscal year 2027, we're in fiscal year 2026 now through the chair. Sorry. Yes.
Okay.
Yep. We're Representative Hannon, you're saying the correct thing. Yes.
That helps a lot. Thank you.
Okay. Should we go on to the Department of Agriculture?
Absolutely. So the December 11th budget that was released does include the transfer and establishment of the Department of Agriculture. So what you will see in the budget subcommittee books is the transfer of the funding and the positions associated with the Department of that were in the Department of Natural Resources being transitioned to the new Department of Agriculture. And happy to take any questions if there are any.
Yes, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. So I completely understand that the time the budget was created, the governor intended to implement an Executive Order 137. There is a court order that says he cannot, and so the Department of Agriculture does not legally exist. And although there is an appeal pending before the Supreme Court is not taking it up on an expedited calendar, has not yet calendared it. It is unlikely to have both hearing and conclusion prior to our budget process concluding in the next 120 days. At some point, is OMB going to amend the budget or to reflect that?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, no, not at this time. The governor has put forward that appeal. I am not Department of Law. I'll let them speak to that. But, yep.
Okay. And follow up, Mr. Chairman, could you remind me which of our committee members oversees the DNR budget?
Yes. It's Co-Chair Calvin Schrage.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, moving on to Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development, two items to highlight. The $2.2 million associated with the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation for the operating funding associated with the Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas, or AKLNG, development project is the same amount that was included last year. It was carried forward. Last year was put in as a one-time item, and so this is restoring that money for fiscal year 2027. Additionally, there is funding for the Power Cost Equalization Program within the AEA, Alaska Energy Authority, that totals $44.3 million.
Okay. Go to slide 7.
Moving on to slide 7, under the Department of Education and Early Development, the funding associated with the foundation formula and the pupil transportation program are both funded at the statutory formula for school districts. Additionally, there is an increase for $3.3 million and $1.6 million from the Higher Education Investment Fund for the Alaska Performance Scholarship and the Alaska Education Grants. I will note here that there also is an appropriation in the bill that recapitalizes the Alaska Higher Education Investment Fund for the amount that was used to cover the deficit in the prior closed fiscal year. It's approximately $129 million. That appropriation is one time, is not carried forward into the next year, and is appropriated from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. Moving on to the Department of Health, we have the continuation of the Senior Benefits Payment Program being fully funded based on the statutory formula. There is an increase of $2.7 million in federal receipts associated with several grants under the Division of Public Health, so bringing on additional receipt authority so those receipts can be distributed and utilized, and then as well as increasing authority, federal authority to support the Crisis Contact Center in fiscal year 2027. Under the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, there is a $1.4 million increase of unrestricted general funds to support the loss of Worker Safety and Compensation Administration account. This account is also known as WISCA. Several years ago, when the reverse sweep was not completed, the balance of this count was swept into the general fund. The workers' compensation has also done an excellent job over the last several years at bringing down our rates, the rates for Alaskans that contribute to this account, meaning there's not as much revenue going into this fund, leaving a shortfall for operations to continue that work in the division.
Let me stop here and ask you. The Department of Health has indicated to Ledge Finance, which informed me, that there would be a supplemental item for Medicaid cost overruns, essentially, in the amount of 34 point something million. Are we to expect that as a supplement on the 2nd of February, an amended supplement?
Chair Josephson, that's a great question. Yes. So each year, by December 15th, the Department of Health transmits a Medicaid projection. The timing doesn't work out where we can get that item included in the budget by the release of the budget. So that Medicaid projection comes out after the fact. So each year we bring forward a supplemental to the legislature based on that Medicaid projection. And you are correct, yes.
All right. I want to follow up with my own question. Just you probably noticed that we've calendared a hearing on a supplemental budget bill. That bill may or may not include this amount. And so I just want to make sure I understand that sometime, presumably in early February, your agency will tell the world we need to amend the supplemental budget as outlined in the regular operating budget to include these extra dollars for Medicaid. Is that fair?
Chair Josephson, that is fair. So statutorily, on February 3rd, the governor has to transmit the supplemental's request to the legislature. So on February 3rd, I anticipate that we will be sending a bill over to you with any costs associated with supplementals, and that will include the Medicaid item. That's the traditional approach that we have taken to bringing that before the legislature. I will note that we do another update on that Medicaid projection, and it's due to the legislature by February 15th. So again, the timing is not ideal, but we will submit based on the December projection on February 3rd, and then there will be an update provided to the legislature on February 15th.
Okay. And another question at the top of the page about the increased draws on the Higher Education Investment Fund. Mm-hmm. The governor, and I'm happy with his decision, he wants us to restore funds drawn in the amount of about $130 million in the current fiscal year. If we were to find who should we query about the longevity of the fund in its current status, in a depleted status? Would that be OMB, or should we go to Deed with that kind of question?
Chair Josephson, the Office of Management and Budget can help coordinate a response on that. We do watch the projection. I know Ledge Finance also has their own projection. We work closely with the Department of Revenue. And we do have projections on the impacts of not returning that funding to the Higher Education Investment Fund. The impacts would begin in fiscal year 2028. And I was remiss in mentioning the two increases for the Department of Education for the Alaska Performance Scholarship and the Alaska Education Grants is due to the legislative changes that occurred and the increased utilization of those accounts. So these are projected increases based on student eligibility, and the outcome may differ depending on actual utilization.
Okay. All right. And then Department of Labor. Did we talk about that?
Yes.
Yes, you did.
Yep.
Yes, you did. Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's coming back to me. Slide 8.
Moving to slide 8, thank you. So the under the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, we have two deposits. One is a supplemental of $40 million, and one is a base FY27 deposit for $33 million, of which $24 million is unrestricted general funds. As we all are aware, we have seen an uptick in the number of disasters that are impacting our state. I heard a number referenced, about one a month. The most recent, Typhoon Halong was substantial, as well as, the continuation into the southeast winter storm and others. For the record, for fiscal year 2027, in an attempt to come up with a methodology that we are using, we've provided a 10-year average as the amount that would be deposited in fiscal year 2027. But I will say, I don't think that there is any way that any one person or any group could predict what costs will be associated with the disasters or what disasters we may experience moving into the future.
One thing, Director, we're going to want, of course, before the end of the session, the best possible accounting of what the federal government paid and didn't pay. Mm-hmm. And then I would be curious, and if I could make this a formal ask, or I could write you a letter, but which departments, because we know that we think DEC had some revenue pluses and minuses, DOT perhaps, certainly DMVA, but if we had an overall one-pager or one paper at any rate that would describe those dollars.
Yes, through Chair Josephson, we can provide a summary of that. I know the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs is working hard with the federal government on the breakdown of what will become state costs versus federal costs that are reimbursed. We have asked each of the departments to track their costs associated with the responses that they've been assisting with, and can provide that information.
All right. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Ms. Sanders, my recollection is that last year we budgeted for disaster relief using a 5-year average versus a 10-year. I am speculating that a 5-year average is a higher amount than the 10-year average. And I am curious whether you ran those calculations and could tell us what the difference is, because I happen to believe even using a 5-year average, we are underfunding it, and the perpetual cycle of we're always going to have supplementals and trying to get us to a more accurate annual prediction of where we need to be. So do you know the difference between the 5-year average and the 10-year average?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I don't know off the top of my head. We can absolutely provide the difference between the two. You're correct in your recollection that last session the legislature used a 5-year average. I don't have a response to what the difference is. I think it's unpredictable. So we could go either way. We were trying to use a methodology as we move forward.
Okay.
Okay. Please continue on slide 8.
Okay. So this year we have in the Department of Natural Resources two items that are they're maintaining programs that were previously in the capital budget. We have tried very hard to review what we are proposing in the capital budget to ensure that it is truly a capital appropriation and whether it should be really reflected in the operating budget as an operational item that should be included moving into the future. So we have two items. One is a continuation of the National Historic Preservation Fund grant, as well as the Critical Minerals Mapping Earth MRI program. So both of these are federal projects. The National Historic Preservation Fund does have a match requirement of $1.3 million. Again, these were items that were in the capital budget and are now just being reflected in the operating budget. Moving down to the third bullet under the Department of Natural Resources, we have the Fire Suppression Fund. What I will say is that there have been two disaster declarations that have been transmitted to the legislature totaling $55 million this year. The amount for fiscal year 2027 is $47.5 million. Again, you know, that is another area where we have difficulty projecting what a fire season is going to look like across the state. We do our best. I will say having the fire funding deposited into the fire fund is helping us get away from those reoccurring, trying to fit everything into one year. It gives us a little bit smoother prediction. And if there is ever excess funding, which there is not at the time, but if there ever is, it does carry forward to the next year as the Department of Natural Resources is working very hard with their other counterparts that are in the fire area on reimbursements to the state that sometimes can be delayed extensively. Lastly, we have the Department of Public Safety. Again, the body-worn and in-car camera operations and equipment was a previous capital project. This is moving it into the operating budget to continue that project, that funding as operational funding that will be ongoing for maintenance and maintaining that equipment, as well as ensuring that they can replace it if it is damaged. And then lastly, there's an increase for $550,000 to expand the training and certification support of law enforcement and village police officers. So there are those that pay to participate in the training that DPS provides, the academy.
Representative Stepp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin, through the chair to Director Saunders. Just interesting exercise here. $1.3 million for body cams, right, and car dash cams, I assume, for troopers. How many officers and how many cars through the chair?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Staff, we can provide statistics. I do know that part of this is for the the operational component of them, as well as like the you're collecting a lot of data. So, but we can definitely give you a breakdown.
Just a quick follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair. Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair, through the chair. You mean like the software stuff, that type of thing? Okay, thanks.
Director, on the 55 million fire declarations, your budget treats that as needing ratification because the funding, you argue, comes through a previous declaration, I think, if I have that right.
Chair Josephson, in conversations with Director Painter at Ledge Finance Division, we decided not to submit a transaction for those items because they had already been approved by the legislature. We will incorporate them in the supplemental summary of overall changes as something that has already been appropriated through that disaster process. It is up to the legislature if they want to take additional action to ratify, so to speak, that approval. In the past, we have not specifically had a line outlining disaster declaration. So it's something that we can work through. Technically, we just didn't want to have something being double counted or seen as a new request.
Okay. I'm not an... I know enough to be dangerous about ratification from the COVID period, May of 2020 in particular. But it could be important to future governors or legislatures how it's described, but as long as we get this thing paid, I assume that that's the – we've got other battles to fight, I assume.
Chair Josephson, I would agree, yes.
Okay. Let's go to slide 9.
So slide 9, starting with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, there were several reductions throughout the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities last session. And so there are increments bringing that money to restore that level as it was prior to the reduction. So $5.2 million for highways, aviation, and maintenance. $1.3 million for their one-time funding that was utilized last year from the Alaska Housing Capital Corporation. And then there is an increase of $1.8 million of motor fuel taxes for a statewide guardrail and roadside hardware repair. That's statewide, as well as for $420,000 of motor fuel taxes for statewide wayside maintenance across the state. Under statewide items, I know I mentioned it earlier under the Department of Education and Early Development, but here is where the recapitalization of the Alaska Higher Education Investment Fund is for the $129.6 million. I've already spoken, so I'm going to keep moving on down. I've also mentioned that the governor's budget includes $2.3 billion in general funds to provide that full statutory permanent fund dividend of approximately $3,600 to Alaskans. And then there is $1.4 billion for permanent fund inflation proofing from the earnings reserve account into the permanent fund principal.
Yes, Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justin. Through the chair, Dalton Highway. We had some reference to maybe 80-foot sections of pipe going up that highway. Are we anticipating extra maintenance funds for that highway in next year's budget?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, at this point, there is no additional funding directed outside of the federal programs that Department of Transportation administers. But we recognize that that area needs extensive work and will need maintenance associated with it, and we're working on that.
But nothing planned?
Not right now.
Director, on the statewide guardrail and roadside hardware repair, Ledge Finance reports that that this appropriation would draw or request more than will arrive in motor fuel tax. I think the total was several million, and this looks like part of the item. But should that, I'm all for improved guardrails. It sounds like it could save someone's life, right? So should that come as a supplemental or, I guess it's an FY27 item. Should it be covered with general fund? I don't know.
Chair Josephson, so we consider this a receipt. So just like any other receipt, if the revenue is not collected, if the revenue is insufficient, then there is nothing to spend there. So we would need to monitor this revenue source very closely to ensure that the projects that the Department of Transportation is moving forward with, it aligns with the revenue forecast. And I will follow up with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities following this. I believe we had checked on that, and we may have just a difference of information between us and Ledge Finance. We can follow up.
Okay. Let's go to slide 10.
All right. So for fiscal year 2027, we're providing just a brief snapshot of the capital budget. This year's capital budget, again, the governor's direction was to, provide the bare minimum when it comes to capital projects and ensuring that it really was meeting the match that we expected to receive from providing the match that we expected to see from the federal government. So their general fund match portion of the budget is $128 million, which is about 82% of the capital budget. As you can see, the majority of that is going to fall into your transportation and public facilities. We've got about just over $20 million in the Department of Revenue, and I'll walk through each one of these related to the AHFC, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, sorry, my acronyms, housing projects that are there, and then within the Department of Environmental Conservation, again, we've got our matching projects for federal wastewater and water projects. So if we move forward into slide 11, I'll start at the top with the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. There is a $15.3 million capital project utilizing Ocean Ranger receipts that will be appropriated to the Alaska Energy Authority for a cruise ship port terminal electrification project. I do not have at the top of my head which project, which communities is next, but the Department of Commerce will administer this through the Alaska Energy Authority. Under the Department of Environmental Conservation, as I mentioned, we have our federal programs for village safe water and wastewater infrastructure projects, as well as the Clean Water and Drinking Water Grant Fund. And those have a required state match associated with them. And then lastly, under the Department of Fish and Game, we have a continuation of $3.3 million associated with the Gulf of Alaska Chinook Salmon Program. Again, this is a continuation of that program, or excuse me, project. We have $825,000 for the Alaska Marine Salmon Program and $6.8 million in federal receipts for the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund activities. Moving on.
If I could, Director, yeah. and I don't want to spend too much time on this because I have folks I can ask about the Ocean Ranger Program, but is the nexus to the purpose of the Ocean Ranger Program that this might clean up the air in calls of ports of call? Is that the
To the chair, Josephson? My understanding is that those receipts can be utilized by for projects that are associated with the cruise ship industry. We have a need. My brief level of knowledge is that there is a federal law that is requiring us to electrify our ports. It's an extensive cost in the state, and it would provide cleaner air, as you're mentioning, by having those cruise ships plug in instead of being operating off fuel or diesel.
Okay. Yes. Co-Chair Foster.
Thank you. Ms. Sanders, thanks for being here. This might be a Fish and Game question, but any reason off the top of your head as to why funding for the Western Alaska genetic testing, any of the studies, was not included?
Chair Foster, if I can maybe call on a lifeline, if that's okay. I've got Director Bonnie Jensen here, and I'm not remembering that project, so I apologize.
Ms. Jensen.
For the record, my name is Bonnie Jensen, and I'm the Administrative Services Director for Fish and Game. Through the chair, Representative Foster, are you referring to the South Peninsula study that was in the capital budget last year?
No, it would just be the just genetic testing for Western Alaskan salmon. I know there's been a debate over the years as to why are we seeing declines and shutdowns in subsistence fishing up the Kuskokwim and the Yukon. You know, as much as we want to, you know, reduce, you know, fishing by whether it's, you know, just large commercial fishing boats, you know, we're always told, well, we need to test because some of those fish don't go up, you know, those. And so what they're catching is not necessarily being what's going up those rivers. And so we're always told, well, there needs to be more genetic testing. And I believe over the past year, we had sent a letter in requesting more funds, some of the Bush Caucus members, and I just don't see any you know, funds in the budget for that. So if it's something that you need to go back and just look into more, that's totally fine too.
Through the chair, Representative Foster, I would have to reach out to the Division of Commercial Fisheries to get a list of the genetics projects.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, there was $500,000 for a CHUM study, and maybe they found another source. We don't know.
Yeah. Chair Josephson and Foster will follow up and get back to you.
Let's go to slide 12.
Okay. So on slide 12, starting with the Department of Health, we have a mental health trust item, home modification and upgrades to retain housing. It's $1.2 million. This is our traditional mental health trust project that we have on an annual basis. Under the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, we have several federal projects that we are receiving funding for, starting with $5 million for public protection and infrastructure support, $26.8 million for a state homeland security grant program, $25 million for deferred maintenance, replacement, and renewal, and this is specific to armories across the state. And then $1.8 million in federal receipts for Air National Guard modernization and sustainment. So great that we have federal funding that we can address some of these issues in the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs. Under the Department of Natural Resources, we have the continuation of the Forest Inventory Initiative for the Susitna and Tanana Valleys. Excuse me, it's $1.9 million of timber receipts. We have a continuation of the Land and Water Conservation Grant Fund program, a total of $4.8 million. And then lastly, $12 million in federal receipts for our cooperative forestry and fire programs. So again, many of these projects are continuations from the prior year or from previous years. On slide number 13, under the Department of Revenue, I noted this earlier, there's $22.9 million of the AHFC dividend that came to the state of Alaska being used for our housing programs. These are our standard housing programs that the Department of, the Alaska Housing and Finance Corporation administers on an annual basis. So your teacher housing, your senior housing projects, so on and so forth. Under the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, we have another one of the supplemental items that I noted earlier. So $70.2 million of state general funds to provide the match for the statewide transportation improvement plan. This is associated with the, I'm sure everyone recognizes, the veto that was made last year of the reappropriations. So this would provide the Department of Transportation the match required in fiscal year 2026 so they can meet that matching requirement at the federal level. Additionally, you have the continuation of this year's federal program match for both highways and aviation, which totals $107.8 million in state general funds. And this year, a change, we are proposing moving the statewide deferred maintenance and renovation and repair capital project. This previously had gone to the Office of the Governor, but we work very closely with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to administer those funds in state agencies and make the improvements across the state. So we're proposing moving the appropriation to the Department of Transportation in an effort to reduce the number of papers being shuffled back and forth and let them administer it directly. And then lastly, there is $27.5 million of Marine Highway System funds for Alaska Marine Highway System vessel overhaul, annual certification, and shoreside facilities rehabilitation.
Question from Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Ms. Sanders, on the statewide deferred maintenance, renovation, and repair, $26 million. Do we have a list of projects that's intended to cover?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, we have a statewide facilities council that works through an annual process of ranking all of the projects throughout the state facilities. So all state agencies submit their list, they're prioritized and ranked, and then that funding is administered on a prioritized level. We can provide the most recent version to the committee if you'd like to see that, but it is done on a reoccurring basis, so it's continually updated so that we can make sure we're addressing the highest needs in the state.
Follow-up? Mm-hmm.
Follow-up? Rep. Hannon.
I understand that. I'm trying to figure out how many projects does $26 million get us to, because in my recollection, again, from last year, that's only a couple of projects at the very top of the list. And
through the chair, Representative Hannon, I think you are possibly referring to the school major maintenance. No?
No.
Oh, okay.
Separate from that.
Okay. Yep, we'll follow up with the list so you can see it. I think, you know, over the years, we've been able to address a significant number of projects, and we can provide that as well.
Okay, so we'll go on to Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Joseph, and through the chair. So maybe this is a better question for DOT, but I would like to see a breakdown of what they're actually planning and preparing to do for maintenance on that Dalton Highway. I know I've been having many questions on that throughout my time in the legislature, and it seems like we really need to be focusing on the maintenance. I mean, they don't want new projects up there. They don't want you to tear up the road and put new road in. They want you to blade the road and keep it flat so they can, you know, go down the road with their big trucks because there's a lot of potholes. So it's probably a better question for DOT, but I really want to see the breakout on what the maintenance is for that section of highway.
Through the chair, Representative, yes, we can follow up with you on projects that are underway at DOT and what the plans are for the future.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I thought since my wheels were getting very specific in my head on the deferred maintenance, I would like to know where the Fairbanks Pioneer home is on this deferred maintenance list that has $26 million, because I still hear Director Mr. Painter telling us we are at risk of a building collapsing and we are nowhere near maintaining it. And, you know, at some point we're going to take it off the maintenance list because it's practically a derelict building. And I'm just trying to figure out if it's now number one and we can get there before we have residents of our Pioneer home that we can't care for.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, just to clarify a bit, the replacement of that facility would not be on this list, but we can make sure we follow up with those type of items for you if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, and the follow-up, it's yes, my understanding is that we've left it on the maintenance list, but it's so far down it's not getting maintained, and he's pointed out that quandary. If we haven't maintained it and we're not replacing it, but where is it on that maintenance list? And my recollection is it was 18 or so million.
Through the chair, we'll follow up with you and get you additional details.
Okay. Slide 14.
Okay. So slide 14, each year we're asked just to provide a brief snapshot on budgeted versus filled positions. So this year we've added a comparison to last December 2024 and where we were. With budgeted positions, so that is the first column, 2024, with budgeted positions for 2025, and then where we are as far as positions being filled. You can see the comparisons in the graph by agency on the right-hand side. I'll scroll forward to the next slide as well, which just provides vacancy rates by department. Where we currently are, this is just a snapshot as of December 2025, and just happy to address any questions. We're at about 15.3% across the state.
Questions? Yes, Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and through the chair, I have a few questions that are more directly related to DEED and kind of the budgeting to help myself and the public kind of be more aware of how it's sort of a separate animal. And I really appreciate that you included it on the bar graph when you went over all of the budget. I think that's helpful for the public to see how much funding goes into that on slide 5. And to help folks understand, when we're looking at DEED here, which is the Department of Education, with a vacancy rate of 18.5, that's just the department itself that helps the districts get either the funds that are pass-through funds, or sometimes they also get professional development help and things like that. And I want to make sure also we appreciate that when you have listed here on, I'm going to try to find the right slide number, salary adjustments on slide 3, those were according to, I assume, labor agreements. And so that would be reflected on employees from the different departments. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, that is correct. So the salary adjustments that are reflected in the budget are only associated with state employees.
Right. And that does not reflect then all of the educators within the state. That is done separately through the formula, and each district then would have to pay those salary adjustments. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes, that is correct.
Okay. And then when we look at follow-up, if I may please, Co-Chair Josephson, when we look at the formula itself, that dollar figure has no adjustment, though, for any teacher salaries. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, so the state of Alaska provides funding through the foundation formula to the school districts. They determine how they're going to allocate their funding for the purposes that they're operating in their school district. So that is a school district decision. It does not include any changes in contractual salary adjustments made by the individual school districts.
Follow up. Thank you. So in the formula, so for this year is not changing, and so there will be $0 in there specifically to adjust to any salary agreements that have been made within any of the 53 districts. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that is correct, yes.
So follow up, if I may. Just to be clear on this, then each district is receiving the same amount of funds through the formula, that is, so that it's different depending on how many students are there, and they will be working with the same number of dollars, and unlike other departments which have public employees, these public employees operate within a different system because they are not... They're a set-aside, so to speak, and the districts have to find the dollars to make ends meet to afford any salary adjustment. Is that correct?
Through the chair, it is incumbent upon the school district to determine what their operations are going to be. You are correct. The base student allocation is a statutory item that would need to be adjusted through law, legislation, and that is not changing at this time. Or has not changed.
Thank you. I appreciate you giving me that flexibility, Co-Chair Josephson, because I think a lot of the public don't understand why it is that these teacher salary conversations are so difficult for us. And I think it's incumbent upon us to help us understand that that's because it's not built into our system. If the formula doesn't change or adjust with any sort of inflation, then it makes it very difficult for our districts to still deliver education in the same way. So thank you. Appreciate that. Thanks for answering those questions.
All right. Let's go to slide 16.
Okay. On slide 16, I just wanted to take a moment to touch on the work that's being done under the two administrative orders, Administrative Order 359, addressing budget efficiency, and then Administrative Order 360, addressing regulatory reform. I'm not going to read through these bullets, but I'm going to talk to you about what is being done in the state relating to both of these administrative orders. So under the budget efficiency item, that is one that I am working very closely on. In the Office of Management and Budget, we have been able to establish what we're calling a grants dashboard. It is out there. It's publicly available on our website and is a historical and live reference to the grants that have been administered in the state, who they're going to, the dollar amounts. So it's just providing more public information or information to the public on how the state is spending their money or administering grants across the state. Additionally, we have been working with several key departments in the state that administer permit and licensing programs in an effort to review the processes and technology that they have in place related to permitting and licensing. So you've got the Department of Natural Resources involved, the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development with their programs that they administer for licensing. We have two reports. The first is a identification of about just over 50 items where we can make improvements in the state to our licensing and permitting processes. And then the second report is roadmaps and how do we get from point A to point B and where can we maximize or leverage resources to streamline operations or modernize processes.
Rep Galvin?
I can ask at the end of this slide if you prefer.
Please
thank
continue.
You.
So under Administrative Order 360, all of our state agencies are working through their regulatory reform packages and plans. Those plans are intended to be posted online just at the beginning of February. The Office of the Governor is working closely with the Department of Law on each department's regulatory package and meeting those requirements of reducing their regulations in their departments. I think what I would share about this is it's very eye-opening to go into departments and to look at some of the things that we've done over the years. As statutes and laws have been passed, we establish regulations, and those don't always get addressed. They sit out there for years and years and years, and this is an opportunity for us to review those regulations that are in place and make sure that we can reduce burdens to industry or reduce burdens to the individuals in Alaska doing business and find ways to streamline what we have and make them more modern and more, get to a cycle where we're going through and reviewing these on an annual basis.
So. Representative Galvin and then Co-Chair, did you?
Thank you. Thank you for sharing these pieces. It sounds like there's a lot of innovations that are happening and much more transparency for the public. Very much appreciate. I have a question around the dashboard. I appreciate that we're going to have a better insight to the grant, or rather the public will and all of us. On the grants piece, I can't help but to think about the $272 million coming in for the health transformation funds, and I'm wondering if the intention is to include that as well on this dashboard.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, yes. So the dashboard that we have is all-encompassing of grants statewide. I do know that the Department of Health is working really hard to make sure that the Rural Health Transformation Fund funding is transparent in how it's being allocated or awarded. They may have additional dashboards on their own website that provide that information if somebody wants to go directly to it.
Great. Thank you very much.
Co-chair.
Yes, thank you, Director Sanders. I really like the regulatory reform piece you've got here. And I think, a lot of times folks in the public look at our regulations sometimes and they get frustrated. And so my question is, if folks in the public have suggestions on how regulations that are obsolete can be gotten rid of or just updated or changed, what's the best way for them to provide their suggestion? Would it be to go through their representative and then get that to you? Or is there some mechanism that the public can also weigh in on this?
That's a great Director. Point, Chair Foster. So part of the process that the agencies are going through is a public comment period. So those individuals are welcome to go directly to the departments. I think you have a good point. I think we need to maybe set up something that allows people to bring items to us, whether that's through yourself or directly to myself, for example. So I will think on that and how we can make at any point an opportunity for people to point out where we think we might have a burden and bring that back to our Deputy Chief of Staff, Balsma, who's leading that process.
Thank you.
Director, how would one calculate whether a regulatory reduction was 15% of an entire regulatory package? How do you
Chair
do
Josephson,
that?
The departments are developing a list to track how many are out there and come up with a methodology where they can calculate what that reduction looks like.
But you couldn't, to meet the letter of what's written in that sentence, you couldn't just say you had 100 regs and you removed 15, because they could have been simple to remove. I mean, I could think of lots of examples. There could be a regulation that requires all hearings be recorded with a cassette recorder. Well, no one uses cassette recorders, so no one cares about that regulation. Do you get credit for getting rid of the cassette recorders as part of your 15%?
Chair Josephson, I would say yes, they do. I mean, one example that was given to me is there is a regulation out there that, you know, somebody can, you know, go send a document. You know, we're in today's technology, we're in email, and they're still using a telegram. Like, that if they make that change to update and to revise their regulation, they should be able to count that as a change to their processes that impacts Alaskans. So,
okay. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I think that was a very good question. I was thinking the same thing, and I guess the answer is we just don't know yet. We'll find out. But a question for the director through the chair. You know, I'm assuming that the intent of this regulatory reform is to make things easier for Alaskans. And if our goal is to go through and remove old regulations like the example you just gave with telegrams or whatever, I'm not sure that I understand that that's really making it easier for us to do business. And so I just want confirmation that our goal here is actually for us to be able to do business in Alaska in a more efficient way and make us more business friendly, getting people back to work, being more productive. And that's really what the goal is here, as opposed to maybe going through and modernizing regulations, because those two things are not the same.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, yes, you are correct. The intent is to find ways where we, you know, have regulations in place that are burdensome, you know, whether somebody has to go through 15 different steps, or, you know, they have to start here and then they have to go over here. The example that I gave was merely just an example off the top of my head, so please don't maybe use that as the shining light. It was just an example.
And a quick follow-up.
Yep, follow-up.
Thank you. Is there an anticipation that once you go through that process, or as you're going through that process, you'll be communicating not only to us but to the public on the successes that you're finding and making it easier to do business in Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, yes, that is the intent.
Thank you.
Co-chairman.
Thank you. I just want to laud the effort. You know, in my life, I've come to the conclusion that I can't be 100% on everything, and I need to follow more of the 80% rule, which means I am thus working at least in the right direction. And I think that's what this does. Whether or not we hit 15%, 10%, at least we're trying. Mm-hmm. We're going in the right direction, and I think it's a good thing. So thanks.
Thank you.
Director, thank you. Before we wind down, are there other items in amended supplementals that you feel comfortable sharing with us now, or should we be patient?
Chair Josephson, excuse me. You know, we're working through that process right now and ensuring that we have, you know, the governor's approval to move forward with things, so I would prefer not to share at this moment. Again, it's right around the corner. February 3rd is very, very, not it very is. Far away. So we'll make sure that we communicate with your staff to make sure we get the documents transmitted to. And again, I'm willing and happy to come before the committee and walk through those once they're released.
Great. Well, want to thank you, Director Sanders, for your presentation. Our next House Finance Committee meeting is scheduled for Monday, the 26th of January, 1:30. At that meeting, yes.
Apologize, Coach.
It doesn't change our Monday schedule, but go ahead.
No, thank you. All right. Shoot. Now that we're at the end, I did have a couple quick follow-up questions. I didn't want to weigh down the presentation here. And I apologize if I didn't miss it. One of the big things that we were hearing about when we talk about supplementals and concerns and things that were in the budget and not in the budget, one of those had to do with the federal disparity test for education. And we know that right now in the budget there isn't that the funding set aside for that. Can you talk a little bit about what you anticipate seeing happening with that, assuming under the scenario that we do not win the appeal?
Director.
So through the chair, Representative Bynum, at this point, as you noted, there hasn't been a determination or a decision on that. Once a decision is conveyed to us, that would be brought before the legislature to be incorporated into the budget. It's premature at this point, so therefore it's not included.
Second question.
Yes, thank you. So follow-up to that, obviously we don't know where the appeal currently stands, but it could be very well the case that we don't know about this until very late in the process, maybe even to the end of this budget cycle. So I was just trying to get a better understanding of what the plan might be, assuming that we are not successful. I mean, it's a big impact. So this isn't a minor thing. This is a big thing. And so if we're just going to say that we're going to ignore it, or that because we don't know, we're going to ignore it until the very end, I'm very concerned by that.
And through the chair, Representative Bynum, from my perspective, this is a proposed budget. There's a lot of work that's going to happen over the next several months on this. I anticipate this committee will come out with a CS. You guys are the appropriators. If you decide that that is what you want to put in or put something in, that is the discretion that you guys have. At this point, from our perspective, it's premature without having a decision.
Appreciate that. And then one final question. Appreciate you bringing all the information here, giving us the highlight. And as you just indicated, we do have a lot of work to do. I do have a high level of concern that when we look at our budget right now, how we prioritize our spending and where we're putting our money matters for Alaskans. And the thin capital budget that we have here raises a lot of big concerns. And I know that our capital problems in the state aren't going to go away because we ignore them. And so I think for us as a committee, it's something for us to consider and communicate not only to Alaskans but to the administration on how important our capital program is and what we should be doing to invest in Alaska. So appreciate your time today.
Okay. With that, again, thank you, Director Sanders. Next meeting, Monday the 26th, 1:30. At that meeting, we'll hear the Office of Management and Budget present on the Governor's FY26 vetoes. We'll adjourn this meeting at 2:51 p.m. Meeting is adjourned.